This episode of Gators Breakdown is brought to you by UFM Underwear. Head to UFMUnderwear.com and use promo code BREAKDOWN for $5 off your purchase. UFM Underwear, support your manhood. And also brought to you by MyBookie, where you can double your first deposit. Head to MyBookie.ag and use promo code GATORS to activate the offer. Bet, win, get paid at MyBookie.
Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. Heartbreak, but man, that was a fun back and forth game between Florida and LSU, a fun back-and-forth game of college football, but Florida comes up short and suffers their first loss of the season to LSU, 42-28. LSU and that offense eventually just too much for the Gators to overcome. Joining me on this episode will be Will Salmon from The Athletic, as he does every Sunday for our reaction episode. Will join me from Baton Rouge, and we'll get to him in a moment, but remember you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes there as well. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. When using those services, please share, rate, and review the show. Let Gator Nation know what they're getting with Gators Breakdown. And on social media, follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. And joining me, as he does every week on this reaction episode, traveling back from Baton Rouge, is Will Salmon from The Athletic. Will, man, the Gators handled the atmosphere of Death Valley pretty well, put up a valiant effort against a really good LSU team.
They really did, right? I thought they put up a tremendous effort, actually. I thought they hung in there. And I think if you could hang with this version of LSU in Death Valley, you could probably hang with anybody. And they proved that. So it was a great effort. And they were only doomed, really, in my opinion, by, you know, a couple of failures in the red zone late. But, and of course, the defensive struggles notwithstanding, that was pretty obvious, particularly against the run. But you really, especially with this offense, you can't really gripe too much about what you saw. Defensively, yeah, there were some issues without Grenard and Zuniga. But like I said, I felt like after watching this team that they're, you could strongly make that argument that they're the team to beat in the SEC East.
Yeah, and Will, I mean, we'll start just like last week. You know, we started with the defense because of their great effort and their great performance against Auburn. And I really think we have to probably start there again this week, and just like last week, and you know, they were, you know, the headline of what, how the game turned out. You know, so we're going to start with this defensive performance. And of course, for a much different reason, we saw the LSU pass game being a tough matchup just because of what they bring to the table. But that was the difference in the game. And perhaps the most surprising aspect was the Gators just giving up huge yardage in the run game. We talked and we previewed this LSU passing attack led by Joe Burrow. But, you know, I did throw out last week in the preview episode that LSU likes to stay balanced. And even though the run game wasn't really working, they were still calling run plays, keeping defenses honest, and really kind of, you know, just stay in balance as far as number of plays called, run or pass. Well, you know, Saturday night, that run game worked for the Tigers, and 218 yards rushing, averaged 9.1 yards per rush on 24 attempts and three touchdowns. Clyde Edwards-Helaire just torched the Gators from the get-go and ended with 13 attempts for 134 yards and two touchdowns, went along at 57, averaging 10.3 yards a carry. Joe Burrow early on was able to escape the pocket, run for 43 yards. Yes, the LSU passing game had its success, but that was somewhat expected. You know, Florida limited big plays in the downfield passing game until LSU's last touchdown on a 54-yard pass from Burrow to Jamar Chase. But you know, the run game had a 57 and a 39-yard run from Helaire, then another from Ty Davis-Prince for a 33-yard touchdown. Now, this LSU run game just came in and dominated the Gators, especially with chunk yardage plays.
That was a good call by you for bringing up the balance of LSU's offense, because I feel like all we heard from sort of LSU media or really even nationally, was their whole big thing on their offense was their offensive line was maybe an issue for them. And their running game was really not up to the standard of their passing game at this point. And while that may have been true, we didn't really see that on Saturday. We saw the exact opposite. We saw a pretty good offensive line. Granted, they weren't blocking against a couple of Florida's best pass rushers, but they played really well, and their rushing attack was fierce. Now, I say that, and a lot of those, a couple of the problems, at least for Florida, was just really poor in terms of fitting their gaps. I mean, I remember one play in particular. You mentioned a 33-yard touchdown. I believe it was in the third quarter, which gave LSU the lead 35-28. That was when Grenard and Zuniga, of course, were both out of the game. And I believe they had Luke Ankrum at defensive end. And right before the ball is snapped, Jeremiah Moon is telling him, trying to push him over to get up to the other side. And by the time Ankrum gets up from his stance and starts moving, the ball gets snapped, and he's kind of caught between the center and the right guard and is easily blocked and out of the play. And right where he was supposed to be was where that hole was wide open. And so there was just – that was an obvious example. But there were other times when just their block scheme was sound, and they really took advantage of Florida's compromised defense in the run game. So it was just long run after long run after long run. And that can be problematic going forward. Even if you have a guy like Jonathan Grenard back or Zuniga back, because, I mean, it was broken tackles. They didn't really get much help at the second level. So, like, there were some issues to the run game is what I'm trying to say, beyond just the absences. But those absences were the obvious reasons why it was as bad as it was, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at what LSU brings to the table on offense. And, you know, it is spread you out. And there's going to be times where it's man on man, and you got to make a hit, you got to make a tackle, you got to get in the backfield. And I really thought the way LSU spread Florida out just kind of limited Florida's physicality and also the mindset. You know, it was stop this passing game, stop this passing game, stop this passing game. And I really thought, you know, Florida's defense was kind of swimming a little bit, maybe even Todd Grantham swimming a little bit, just concentrating so much on this run game that, you know, Florida's defense played a little timid. And I really think that showed just by, you know, by the way LSU was able to run the ball. It's just Florida couldn't really just, you know, just concentrate on being physical. It was more worried about, hey, let's not give a pass over the middle or, you know, something to that situation. I really just think, you know, Florida's defense, for the defense, just their heads weren't in it just because of worrying so much about that LSU passing game.
Yeah, I can definitely see your point there. It's probably true to an extent. One of those things where I feel pretty confident that was the case, but it's very hard to prove without sort of being inside their head, of course. But I can definitely understand that and get down with your line of thinking there, because also the Tigers were moving fast. I mean, they were making decisions. They were getting the ball out quick. They were hurrying up to the line. So
and we
didn't make a whole lot of adjustments.
Yeah, and the issue with that there is, I mean, that's nothing new. I mean, we've seen it on tape all season, and this was a very fast-paced offense. And, yeah, I mean, I agree. You brought it up perfectly, and we'll get into it. Zuniga and Grenard now out there. But, you know, you would assume this whole week in practice, Florida was practicing just the speed of what LSU was bringing to the table.
Yeah, I do think it's a little bit different, though, when you have a team like LSU, because – what makes them different than, say, Auburn's offense is Auburn was all pre-snap nonsense, where it was a lot of window dressing. It was a lot of, you know, show this, but we're going to do this. LSU makes a lot of adjustments right before that ball is snapped based on what they're seeing from your defense. And then not only that, but there are different things that they're doing within the play once the ball is snapped that they're making adjustments off of based on what they're seeing defensively. And Burrow knows all of that, their quarterback. And he's a cerebral player when it comes to looking at a defense, seeing what they're giving him, and then making a quick decision. We saw that in good spots for him. But I'll say this about the defense. I know a lot of people were kind of down on them after the game, of course, saying like, hey, you know, they were playing maybe a, I don't want to say a softer schedule because Auburn was there, but I mean, Auburn's offense featured a true freshman quarterback, and people could obviously point to the two FCS games. Miami's inexperienced offensively, Kentucky playing with a backup, and you say, okay, yeah, maybe this defense wasn't really that good. But I'll say, though, that LSU's offense was the best offense, obviously, that they played. But mm-hmm. they're not going to play another one quite like LSU's, at least not in the regular season.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and much like we, you know, previewing this game and looking at the defenses LSU played and kind of, you know, people kind of maybe, you know, thinking negatively of LSU's offense, you can also kind of apply this to the Florida defense. At least in those situations, you were doing what you were supposed to do. You know, you have worry sometimes if you're playing a weaker opponent and you're not doing what you're supposed to do. But much like LSU's offense, when they were playing Georgia Southern, Texas, and Vanderbilt, and those defenses that really couldn't stop the pass, you know, at least they were doing what they were supposed to do. And that's why it gave you worry. And that's why, you know, I'm sure the LSU side was worried about this Florida defense, because they were doing what they were supposed to do against those teams in those situations. And Will, with that said, you know, we'll continue this LSU offense versus this Florida defense talk. And this LSU offense really stresses, and the passing offense really stresses defenses. And you can see they can pass outside, they can pass over the middle vertically. It was a bad matchup for Florida once Jonathan Greenard and Jabbar Zuniga couldn't play. You know, I'm not sure how much effect those two players would have had in the end. Of course, you think some, but you also had the secondary in position to make tackles and make plays and make pass breakups, and you know they couldn't get it done. Wide receivers would catch the ball. They couldn't make the secondary couldn't make the tackle after initially there to make a play. Henderson, Wilson, all of them struggled there. And Will, in everything this Gators defense has excelled in this year, they just couldn't replicate versus the Tigers. LSU's offensive line was questioned all week, as we kind of mentioned, and we already discussed what they were able to do in the Florida run game, but they were also instrumental in not giving up any sacks for this Florida defense. Only one tackle for loss. Burrow moving around helped there. So, you know, with all that lack of pressure and havoc that we're used to seeing from this Gators defense create this year, you know, that was a chain reaction for the Gators not creating any turnovers. So this Gator defense that was near tops in sacks in the nation, led the nation in turnovers, they just could not figure out this LSU offense without its top two pass rushers on the sideline. So no sacks, no turnovers. Joe Burrow had as many incompletions as he had touchdown passes with three. I mean, it was a mismatch, Will, once Florida's two best pass rushers were on the sideline.
Yeah, but I would say even that first series, though, it wasn't as if like they were getting a lot of pressure in Joe Burrow's face. The pressure wasn't even there. I mean, he had a lot of time to throw. I think there was maybe one play where he was under pressure in the first couple of drives. Particularly the first drive, but really what I was seeing was a guy who had some time, and that, you know, I mean, when you're against Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, those guys are going to find their ways to make catches. I mean, like, I get C.J. Henderson, Marco Wilson, those are a couple of tremendous defensive backs, but those are some really good wide receivers, and they're gonna get open, they're gonna get theirs, whether it comes early or they figure it out eventually. Probably going to happen. And so I just feel like when that pass rush is non-existent like it was, it puts them in a bind. It really does, the secondary. So, yeah, you can kind of say like maybe it wasn't their best game in the back end, and it wasn't, but a lot of that has to do with them just not getting much of a pass rush there, I felt like, because Gresham tried to bring some at times. He kind of did the same thing that he's been doing, where he sort of disguised the fourth guy as the fourth guy who's rushing, and it didn't really work as well. We saw him try to, you know, blitz David Reese a couple of times. It didn't quite get there. And I thought that maybe he would blitz a little bit more heavily, but again, it's like you can't do that because they're getting the ball out so quick. They're knowing what to do with the ball right away, and they have playmakers. So it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation there. And too often times they fell on the wrong side of it.
All right, we'll transition. Anything else you want to hit on this defensive side? I know the article you released on The Athletic, you released it early, late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, kind of reviewing this game and more from what we've kind of discussed on this defensive performance for the Gators. I know you hit really hard the red zone defense last year or last week on The Athletic as well, hitting, what how well Florida was doing as a red zone defensive team there. LSU had some chunk yardage touchdowns, but at least that first touchdown, they were able to go down the field, and that was a, easy red zone touchdown once they got down there.
Yeah, that was a simple RPO play, well executed by LSU on that first one. But it just really underscored how important Jonathan Gernard and Jabari Zuniga are to this defense. And I know you could take away any two playmakers, any two of your top defensive linemen on any team, and the results are not going to be good. But I just feel like it's just even more so with Florida, just because you can't really look at that team after Saturday and say they have any depth beyond Jabari Zuniga at defensive end. Because without Zuniga, they were putting in Gernard at that spot. And then without both of them, where do you turn? Didn't really get much out of the backups there. And that's going to be an issue if these guys can't go or are limited in any sort of fashion, because Dan Mullen didn't really give us a whole lot as far as what their availability was going forward.
All right, we'll move to the other side of the ball here, Will. And if I had given the fan base the stat line of Florida running 84 plays, Kyle Trask would go 23 of 39 for 310 yards, 3 touchdowns and 1 interception. The run game would produce 146 rushing yards. I'd say most of the fan base would have taken that, but yet it wasn't enough. Van Jefferson goes for 8 catches, 73 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Kyle Pitts had a monster first half and ended up with 5 catches for 108 yards in the game. But at the end of the day, that wasn't enough. Florida had LSU right where they wanted them going into halftime. As far as having a formula to win on offense, the Gators defense was struggling. LSU had scored touchdowns on 3 of their 5 possessions in the first half, not counting the kneel down drive right before halftime. But the Gators offense responded to each and every one of those drives with their own touchdowns to have the game tied at 21, all going into the locker room. Dan Mullen was calling a masterful game. Kyle Trask was finding open receivers. Kyle Pitts was abusing LSU defensive backs. LaMichael Perine was running tough and finding yards. Emory Jones came in at the right times and kept LSU's defense off balance and threw a miraculous touchdown to LaMichael Perine. All that led touchdown drives of 12 plays, 75 yards, totaling 6 minutes and 21 seconds. 13 plays, 75 yards, totaling 6 minutes and 56 seconds. And then right before halftime, an 11-play, 75-yard drive that took 3:51 off the clock. And that touchdown drive tied the game at 21. All that gave Florida twice the amount of time of possession with a 20-minute and 13-second to 9-minute and 47-second and a 43-22 play advantage over LSU in the first half. As far as offense goes, Will, you couldn't have asked for a better script in the first half for the Gators.
No, and the funny thing is about this game was Florida threw for more passing yards than LSU.
Yeah.
Like, that was a weird thing to kind of see at the end of the game. It was 311 to 293. The difference, of course, though, was the average attempts. I mean, the average per attempt, the yards per attempt on passing. Florida was, I think, at around 7. LSU was at 12.2. So that kind of underscores everything that you were saying there, David, with time of possession, the amount of plays being drastically different to kind of get to the end zone for both teams. But you got to tip your hat to Dan Mullen. He coached a heck of a game, I thought, at least. He really took apart mismatches with Kyle Pitts, like you mentioned, and switched things up then when LSU pressured more in the second half and made some adjustments. He went to Van Jefferson and challenged a very young and talented LSU cornerback. But just it wasn't enough. I think that we did learn, though, that what this offense is capable of, and you got to feel good about Kyle Trask and Emory Jones. And it's kind of interesting because they said, or Dan Mullen said when Felipe Franks went down, that they were going to use the two quarterbacks. And you kind of raise your eyebrow a little bit. And you kind of think, okay, well, what exactly is this going to look like here? I thought in a perfect situation, what it looked like was what happened on Saturday night, where I thought it worked really well. I thought they fed off each other well. The plan obviously was to bring Emory Jones in right when they reached the 30-yard line or so, right around the – right when it became an obvious red zone trip or one capable of getting there. That was time to bring in Emory Jones, kind of with shortened field, was able to make things happen in the run game. And then Kyle Trask was efficient, poised. I mean, every adjective you want to use. So it's a good combination. I feel like this game gave people some hope that they could score points and this offense can move the ball. And not for nothing, but it didn't really surprise me because you're combining, you know, a really good play caller in Dan Mullen with two quarterbacks who at this point know the system, know how to pick apart mismatches, and you have a group of wide receivers that when they spread out five wide or four wide receiver sets, there's too many guys to account for, and you're going to have a problem there if you're the opposing defense, and the quarterbacks are able to find it, and the scheme is good. So I just feel like the offense is not really that much of a concern for me, because although the offensive line had its moments where it was a little bit overmatched on some running plays, the pressure was there on a couple of throws. Emory Jones was, I think he had a defensive lineman basically on top of him on that throw to Pirine. But they weren't completely, I feel like, overwhelmed by the atmosphere. And so I thought that was a positive as well, where it wasn't like the nightmare situation of false start after false start, sack after sack. We didn't see that. It wasn't pretty, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't a complete sense of overwhelming from the defensive pressure against that offensive line. So all in all, I thought like the offense was pretty solid, and it gave a lot of hope going forward that if you need them to score points, if you need them to move the ball down the field, yeah, it's not going to be as explosive as LSU, but they'll get the job done.
Yeah, but you know, going into this game, I thought that was the formula Florida needed just to limit LSU's possessions, and that's what they were getting in the first half, and you know that continued into the second half as well. Where Van Jefferson and Trask, I mean, they just had a drive, you know, where they just took over to take the lead. The first play, Trask to Jefferson for 20 yards, and the very next play, the same route by Jefferson goes for 17 yards. Two plays later, Trask finds Jefferson again for 12 yards, and then to cap that drive off, finds Jefferson in the end zone as Jefferson takes a hard hit to the back and hangs on for the touchdown to take a 28-21 lead. At this point, Will, you know Florida is going to be in this game and fight tooth and nail with LSU. Mullen, as you said, you know, Mullen was taking advantage of matchups and the Gators took the lead in the second half. You know, LSU was going to have to respond. There was finally some pressure on LSU and their offense to respond, but they did, of course. But, you know, Will, to go back to Dan Mullen here and what he's able to do, you know, two good things I look for in coaches in game situations. And good coaches do this is when given the opportunity to score going into halftime and then score coming out of halftime in a game where you know you have to put up points, you know, those two drives made a statement in Florida keeping pace with LSU.
Definitely. And it was really creative. I thought the usage of Emory Jones was impressive. The play designs were smart. And if you look at a couple of those drives, even the one that started when they were pinned on their own eight, they were able to move the ball. And a lot of that occurred because of the creativity in the usage of the personnel. And I point to a couple of big third down pickups within that drive where they went five wide receiver set. And I think there was one play in particular where even Gene Delance came up, blocked somebody at the second level to free up. You know, I forgot who was freed up. So I'm sorry about that.
But it was a screen. It was a screen to Swain, I believe. And
Swain, yeah, it was Swain. Yeah. And it was an in-man coverage, so you completely wiped out that guy with the Delance block. And so that was just a really smart, crafty way. And we saw that time and time again on big downs, like because that one was a third and 10 from way back in their own territory. And again, I mentioned the Emory Jones usage, but that's worth repeating just because we're going to see more of Emory Jones. And I think we're going to see his role increase a little bit is my hunch. But we saw a lot of good things from him. We know that he could run, but I felt like he made some really good decisions with RPOs. I felt like he made some good decisions throwing the ball as well. So I don't know. My level of confidence in Emory Jones is growing, especially after that performance.
Yeah, we'll get into that here too a little bit here, Will, before we wrap up and what the Gators were able to do in Baton Rouge. And unfortunately, Will, the Gators stopped scoring there at 28 points. And, you know, there was a sequence of offensive drives that really just seemed to get Florida out of rhythm here. You know, LSU responded to tie the game at 28, and Florida's taking over at their own 25-yard line with 7:12 left in the third quarter. Trask finds P. Ryan on a 27-yard gain, but Stone Forsyth was called for holding, backing up the Gators here. And so first and 20 after that eventually turns into a third and 19 where Trask is sacked. Florida punts from their own end zone. LSU scores on a four-play, 52-yard drive right after that to regain the lead, 35-28. And then the next drive, you mentioned Emory Jones' usage here, but this was the drive, the first time he was, you know, taking over on the first play. You know, takes over for the first time, starting on the drive, and that drive goes nowhere. Now, you know, LSU would punt the ensuing drive, so, you know, it didn't really end up hurting. But, you know, those two drives, starting without holding call on fourth side, just really got Florida out of a groove. And credit to LSU, too, here by bringing some pressure. That was a really nice adjustment by Dave Aranda there on those two drives. Now, I was worried about Florida holding up if the game turned into a shootout, and it was these two drives where Florida just couldn't keep up.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was really the difference, I thought, with LSU's defensive game planning, is that they started to bring the pressure on those drives. And that was a big difference, because I don't want to say Kyle Trask had all day to throw on some of those, but he wasn't facing that much of a rush in his face, at least, like we saw later on. And I'm with you. Those two drives, I mean, you, in hindsight, you do things differently.
Yeah.
But did you kind of expect them to continue to just – I mean, just – Matt, looking at it realistically, I'm just saying to myself, like, there's going to be a time where they're going to force a three and out. I mean, that's just going to happen. You're just hard pressed to continue to put up methodical drive after methodical drive ending in touchdown like that. I wasn't all that surprised, is what I'm trying to say. Once that happened, it was kind of an eventual thing where I thought their defense needed to, Florida's defense needed to kind of do the same thing and get that stop, and it just never happened. And so, yeah, their offense didn't move the ball in those couple of drives, but I mean, you're not going to be perfect against this defense. I know they're not as maybe great as they were in the past, but it's still a very good LSU defense.
Yeah, going back to that, you know, that Emory drive where he started that possession there, you know, Florida still only down by a touchdown, 35-28 after those two drives, and then putting together a nice drive to go tie the game. Florida drives it down to the LSU 17 and has a second and two where Emory comes in and only gains 1 yard after Trask leads the offense all the way down. And Will, in the first half, when it, you know, just seemed Mullen picked the right times to get Emory in, those decisions felt a little off in hindsight, of course, in the second half. But the execution left a lot to be desired as well from the offensive line in the situation. You know, Emory was stuffed for a 1 yard gain on that second and two, and then it comes back. And then, you know, after that comes the backbreaker interception on third and one, where it looked like Kyle Trask and Swain weren't on the same page. And Tyree Cleveland is, you know, held on his route big time, a big miss from the officials here on that play. 3 plays later, Burrow finds Jamar Chase for a 54-yard touchdown and puts LSU up 2 touchdowns. That essentially puts the game away. You know, Florida had a chance after that, but, you know, would have called for a score had they after that, and then needed an onside kick as well. So, you know, it was those 3 drives there where – you know, the holding call backs you up. Emory Jones starts the next drive, and then you do drive, but throw the interception in the third and one. When you go back and look at this game, it's that sequence of 3 drives there that were the difference for the Gators.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, you tell me how you felt about the third and one call. In the moment, I thought, well, you know, what are they doing? Pass the ball, you know, just run the ball. But then a few seconds later, I'm saying to myself, okay, well, I'm sure LSU is sort of expecting the run though too. So I felt like, I mean, you call a play fake there. I mean,
yeah, it is just tough.
What I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think I even tweeted at that time. Florida probably needed to get creative there to get a score. and make sure right. they get a score in that situation. And you know, while that's not necessarily a creative call, it is something, as you said, maybe LSU is not expecting at the time.
Yes, because look, the run wasn't working. I mean, that was clear. And so I don't hate it. And I actually probably, I'm in line with saying that was probably the right thing to do there. The execution, though, like you said, was just off. I mean, Kyle Trask is making a bad decision there, and he's thrown off his either his back foot or at least his feet were not set while he was making that throw. It just looked really awkward right when he was releasing it. You kind of held your breath there just because it never looked pretty from the release. And yeah, I just think that the overall lack of execution really was the culprit there, because there was that play. There was the offensive line finally showing some struggles that were costly this time late in the game. So again, just a lack of execution there from your quarterback in that one play, and then the offensive line on a couple of those that really cost or doomed the Gators offensively.
All right, well, you know, Gators get their first loss of the season when they travel to Baton Rouge there, as we said. A really good effort there from the Gators, but you know, there's no moral victories in football in the SEC. But in the end, when you look at the big picture, and you know, we'll get into that, of course, as the week goes on, and Georgia losing and all that. But you know, we kind of looked at this game as Florida playing with house money anyway, going into this game. And there's some things to be confident in coming out of this LSU game, and maybe some worry too with the injuries and the health on the defensive side of the ball. You know, but all in all, I think, you know, Gator fans still have to feel pretty good about where this team is.
Yeah, I mean, all your goals are right in front of you still. You can still win the SEC East. You can still win the SEC. You could still go even loftier aspirations than that. I mean, nobody is going to fault you for losing at LSU to one of the best teams in the country, hands down. And not looking terrible at all in that effort either. It was a pretty good effort from Florida, and you showed a lot of good things. But yeah, I mean, all your goals are right in front of you. You obviously have to get healthy on defense. But from what we saw on Saturday, that division is very attainable, to say the very least. And like I said at the beginning of the conversation, for my money, I would put the favorite as Florida right now, just based on what we've seen so far this year, particularly on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know, like I said, you released your kind of initial article looking at this game and looking at the Florida defense. What else you have coming up on The Athletic?
Well, as you participated in a couple of weeks ago, we run the exit survey following the game as well. This week I'll be joined by Kate Casey, so that should be fun.
Yeah.
So that's a good one coming up. We'll also have a mid-season report this week as well. It's a staff-wide thing that we're doing at The Athletic on every college football team that we cover. So obviously we'll have one on Florida. We're looking ahead to the South Carolina matchup as well, because that looks a lot more interesting than it did, say, 6 or 7 days ago.
Absolutely, it does. All right, that's Will Salmon in Baton Rouge. Going to be traveling back. So, Will, man, safe travels. We'll get you back in Gainesville. But thanks for joining us here on Gators Breakdown. And hopefully get back to Gainesville all safe and sound.
Appreciate it, man. Always enjoy it.
Are you ready to bet on some football? Then MyBookie is the place to bet on football every week. Whether you want to make a national title bet or wager on this weekend's games, MyBookie has you covered. MyBookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, they pay. Have some fun with betting this season. MyBookie lets you bet on which college coaches will get fired, who will make the college football playoff, or win the Heisman Trophy. You can even bet on halftime lines and live odds. If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. Also, MyBookie allows you to bet on FBS versus FCS games. So right now, you can still get the offer of doubling your first deposit at MyBookie. Use promo code Gators to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today at MyBookie.ag. That's MyBookie.ag. And don't forget to use promo code Gators when creating your account to claim the bonus. Bet, win, get paid at MyBookie. And guys, you have got to try UFM underwear. Hot out there still. It's still hot out there in October if you're in the state of Florida. Cooling down a little bit, but my UFM underwear will have you covered. Whether you're tailgating or working, you need a pair of UFM underwear. Underwear for Men is the only brand of men's underwear that offers both isolation and support, all while keeping you cool. Unlike other pouch underwear brands that have thin mesh panels or pre-sized pouches, Underwear for Men's patent-pending design prevents skin-on-skin contact and eliminates chafing. Underwear for Men is a state of Florida company, so you're shopping local when you buy UFM underwear, and they have you covered no matter the activity. Everyday underwear, athletic underwear, work underwear, medical underwear, Underwear for Men is made for it all. Try your pair now. Head over to UFMunderwear.com and use promo code BREAKDOWN to get $5 off your pair of UFM underwear. UFM underwear, support your manhood. And of course, every reaction episode, get to your guys' thoughts as well. The fans' thoughts here. Thank you guys so much, you know, for interacting on Twitter and sending me your thoughts. And, you know, we do that every Sunday here. Get some of the fans' thoughts out there as well. Starting with John James Curto here. He says, recruiting the trenches, rearing its head tonight. We'll be good, though. The foundation is there. Shore up the lines and build some more depth, and we're winning that game. And also Zachary Garner, 44, same thoughts along those lines as well. He goes, I just want to be better. We need to get those kinds of recruits in. We had a chance, but only a small chance with the kind of talent we were up against. And, yeah, recruiting in the trenches, you probably will look there first. You probably need to look there first for every SEC team, recruiting in the trenches. And, you know, on defense right now, you know, Florida is relying on transfers to get a lot of production there. Grenard, of course, and Schuler anchor that defensive line. And, you know, Grenard's not out there, so you're taking a big hit there. Zuniga has been developed as a recruit, but injured as well. And you probably feel good about edge rusher with the Abate and Bogle in the future. You know, but true defensive linemen are inconsistent with Carter, Anklin, Dunlap, Slayton. Just haven't been able to count a lot on those guys to be big-time playmakers. And, of course, at defensive tackle, you're not looking for big-time playmakers. But you, when you're playing a team like LSU and they surprise you in the run game, you hope you could kind of make some adjustments, or those plays never happen in the first place. But if they do, make some type of adjustments there and those guys start playing better and stopping the run. But LSU was able to run on Florida pretty much all night long. And on the offensive line, just wasn't left enough from the last staff and having to play guys with not a lot of experience there after what you lost last year. So, you know, now Florida, you know, they don't have elite players on the roster at those positions on the offensive line, but there are some good young talent to develop, and recruiting got an uptick there, especially last week with Isaiah Walker's commitment there. So, you know, I don't like getting into recruiting talk so much during the season, but it does have to get better in the trenches, and we saw that versus LSU. My name is Earl says, two red zone stops was the difference. Great game. See them in the SEC title game. Heads up, Gator Nation. This story isn't over. So a couple things there, of course. And, it's not over. This is only one loss, of course. You know, Florida's had one loss seasons before that have turned out pretty well. So, you know, we'll just let the season play out. You know, of course, get by South Carolina, get prepped for Georgia. And that goes into, Morgan sending her text to Morgan. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right. Rectine there. So if I'm not, I apologize there, but you also say overall pretty pleased with the game, except our defense, that was ugly. But yes, we got to get healthy. Everything is still in front of us. So absolutely, everything's still in front of this Gator team. Plenty of time to rally the troops there. Go beat South Carolina, like I said. Get healthy, prepare for Georgia. You know, this team can still hold its head high. And look, there's no moral victories, as I discussed with Will earlier, but man, this team fought tooth and nail with LSU. Game was closer than the score indicated. You fought all the way to the end. There are things you can point to feel good if you're a fan for these Gators, and if you're a player and a coach that you can point to and feel really good about. Yes, things need to get better in certain areas, but plenty to point to feel good about where this Gator team is heading into basically the back half of the schedule. But basically, to get back to my name is Earl and his thoughts on the red zone, you know, Florida was 4-6 in the red zone. Difference? LSU was 3-3. And is Florida defense. And I'll go back to Will Salmon's article when he highlighted the red zone defense for the Gators. This was coming into the game with an opponent red zone scoring percentage of 35.7% for this Gators defense. Temple was the second best at allowing 52.6%. So, you know, the Gators defense had been stingy in the red zone. And opponents have only scored 5 times in 14 attempts going into this game against LSU. It was 3 touchdowns, 2 field goals, but LSU goes 3 for 3 with 2 passing touchdowns and 1 rushing touchdown in the red zone. So LSU got down there. They made the most of it and scored. They only got down there 3 times because, you know, they also hit some big plays that never allowed them to even get into the red zone. They scored some big touchdown plays as well. But, man, you know, I'll give it to Florida there for it was the difference. You know, like I said, scored 4 out of 6. 4 of those were passing touchdowns. And, you know, I worried about not worried. I wondered about Kyle Trask in the red zone. Everything shrinks. You have to throw the ball with some zip. You have to make good decisions. And for the most part, he did, except for the 3rd and 1. He just didn't look like he knew what Freddie Swain was going to do there. I had to really go back and watch that play more, maybe ask or see what Dan Mullen has to say about it as well. But, I mean, all in all, you know, more so, I thought, on the defense again of giving up the 3 touchdowns there in the red zone. I mean, LSU's good in the red zone. Don't get me wrong. They proved coming into this game they were really good in the red zone and scoring in the red zone too. And, you know, Florida fought valiantly there as well on the offensive side of the ball and scoring when they were in the red zone as well. But just 2 of them came up short, of course, the turnover 3rd and 1 and at the end of the game, the option play that just went nowhere for the Gators to try and maybe make some magic happen late. But, man, that was a... Even though the Gators lost, I mean, that was a good game of college football. It was a fun game of college football. I think Gators surprised some people. Gators probably will get some respect in a loss. We don't know. We kind of know the narrative coming in to this game out there where nobody was kind of giving Florida respect. People will look at the final score, 42-28, and the point spread of 13.5, and saying LSU covered. And they'll probably look at the score and blanket it that saying LSU did what they were supposed to do. And they did, in a way. But if people watch this game, and they should have, well, it was a prime time highlight game for ESPN, but people really sat and watched this game. I don't think you can come out of this game and disrespect Florida much anymore. And kind of, you know, cementing themselves after Georgia's loss as a true contender in the SEC East. That's where we go. That's where we go from here. Go to South Carolina, go to Columbia, maybe facing their 3rd-string quarterback. You go there and get a win, get healthy, and win in Jacksonville. That's the plan right now. Of course, we can look towards for Vanderbilt in Missouri as well. But for right now, in the immediate future, that's what the Gators are looking at. That's what the Gators need to do coming up in these next few weeks. All right, before we go, let's take a look at what happened in the SEC and other games of note as well. And of course, the big upset was double overtime win for South Carolina over Georgia, 20-17, to get a big win as they host Florida next week, does South Carolina. And I tell you what, Will Muschamp, Kirby Smart, not a lot of good coaching decisions in that game. Ryan Helinski goes down for South Carolina, so South Carolina's on their basically 3rd-string quarterback right now. But they find a way to win in Athens with a 20-17 upset of Georgia. Tennessee really shuts down Mississippi State 20-10. I mean, Garantano comes in after Maurer goes down for Tennessee, leads Tennessee to a victory there. So Tennessee gets their first conference win of the year and improved to 2-4 as Mississippi State drops to 3-3. The SEC game of the week on CBS was Alabama and Texas A&M, a 47-28 win for Alabama as they roll past the Aggies there. Another big upset in the SEC, but man, this one was ugly. UNLV 34-10 over Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt 1-5, 0-3 in the SEC, but 1-5 on the season. You know they were pointing to this one as a possible win here, and Vanderbilt Derek Mason's got to fight, figure something out there to maybe turn that season around. But team really falling off, really falling off so far this year. Another high scoring game here. Ole Miss traveled to Missouri, and Missouri 38-27, 5-1 on the year now after dropping the opener versus Wyoming. And, probably another team we'll have to keep an eye on here in this SEC East race. Kentucky, 24-20 winners over Arkansas, 24-20, as Lynn Bowden was playing quarterback for Kentucky. Only threw for 78 yards, but he ran for 196 yards. So Kentucky with their third-string quarterback, who's not even really a quarterback. He played high school quarterback some in Lynn Bowden, but, man, outlast Arkansas 24-20. And then once again, LSU 42-28 over the Gators. And let's take a look at the standings now. There's enough SEC games played, enough wins and losses happening now where you can really start looking at the standings and kind of see where everybody stands right now. In the SEC East, Missouri leads the conference right now with a 2-0 conference record, 5-1 overall. Only playing two conference games, they are 2-0. So that leads them, that makes them leaders in the SEC East right now. Florida at 3-1 in the conference, 6-1 overall. Georgia 2-1, 5-1 overall. So Missouri, Florida, Georgia there. Missouri undefeated at 2-0 in the conference. Florida 3-1, Georgia 2-1. South Carolina with their win over Georgia improves to 2-2 in the conference. Tennessee 1-2, Kentucky 1-3, Vanderbilt 0-3 as far as conference record goes. And in the West, setting up to be an Alabama-LSU battle here. Alabama in the West 3-0 in the conference, LSU 2-0 in the conference. Both teams, of course, 6-0 overall. And then it's Auburn at 2-1, Ole Miss at 2-2, Mississippi State at 1-2, Texas A&M 1-2, and Arkansas at 0-3. That'll do it for this episode of Gators Breakdown. Thank you so much for joining me. I wish it would have been under better circumstances for our Gators, but hopefully they can rebound, rally the troops, and finish the second half of the season on the right note. I'm your host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.